Good morning, everyone. I do have a couple of announcements to make before we begin. A good friend of ours that's visited here on a number of occasions, Gary Jones, who lives down in Birmingham, passed away Monday, December the 9th. He was a longtime Dorito, and they lived down in Birmingham. On occasion, they would come up here to visit. We express our sympathy to his family. Please also pray for Jim and Phyllis Myers. Jim is in rehab after being hospitalized due to a fall. He continues to improve, but is still in pain. And finally, a fellow that used to drive over from around, what is the name of the town you live in?
Joe, he lived in Cesar.
Cesar, yeah.
Cesar, Illinois. His name was Butch Harris.
Right. Yeah. And he went by Harris. It was Harris Harris. You couldn't forget that name because he had two of them. And he would come over on occasion from your neck of the woods.
Yes, sir.
On a motorcycle, right. And he would ride that road. You didn't ride a motorcycle over here, did you?
No. I'm smarter than that.
Well, maybe that's why he's dead. Anyhow, he's absent from the body and face-to-face with the Lord. We'll miss him. He's a funny guy. In our studies today, we're on page 424. We worked our way down in our study to the bottom of the page. back in the day when I was doing doctrines, as we moved through the study, we would find a reason to do a doctrine. There was an occasion where we needed to study money. This being the Christmas season, I guess you're familiar with having to have money around in order to buy stuff. But nevertheless, we did do that study. There's a link down at the bottom of page 424. And when you get to that spot in your documents, you can click on the link there and restudy the doctrine if you desire. We'll resume our study then at point 11. In their reversionism, these rich men, we're in the concept of rich men here. They're rich because they have a lot of money, but also the fact that they're able to do things with their money that are not necessarily, let's just say, thought through. Nevertheless, they have plenty of it. These rich men abuse their wealth, as described by James in verses 4 and 5, and fail what would be prosperity testing, engaging and changing opportunity for blessing and for life and cosmic systems. That's one of the problems with having a lot of money if you don't have doctrine, is you don't know how to manage all of the cash you've got. And therefore, you can spend yourself into a lot of deep trouble, and that's the context in which we find ourselves in this particular passage in James. Now, James describes the lifestyle in which they lived. This is a constitutive aorist active indicative of the verb Tromphao. It means in luxury and in pleasure. So they had a lot of money, and they can therefore afford a lot of things, and they can have their brand of pleasure. And we know from context that they let the loose end drag. And the constative plural aorist active indicative of the verb spatalao means luxury in eating and drinking. So they had a lot of food, they crammed down and chased it with a little alcohol. Self-indulgent. And they were therefore wanton. That means without having check or limitation. Let the loose end drag was the idea there. So they have a lot of money. They could do a lot of things. And the things that they decided to do were said to be wanton. The word translated wanton in the King James Version is the constitutive plural aorist active indicative of the verb trepho. It means to fatten yourselves by revelry. Any of y'all ever done that before? Been revelrous? I knew the ladies have never done that, but some of us have done revelry. So that's what these guys were doing. You get to the point of where you can overcome your revelrous ideas. Wives will do that for you. Anyhow, you can calm down, have a more organized approach to life. So lascivious and promiscuous merrymaking is something that you have to give up. Now, James clearly illustrates that these men are used to living high on the hog. They can afford that, not only from their own wealth, but also from the labor of others whom they hire to do a job, but refuse to pay them once the task is completed. They hire them to do something, they perform the task, and then don't pay them. You'd think they'd be killed for that, but nevertheless, in the context here, these people have done a great job of harvesting the crops, getting them to the back door of the grocery store, doing everything that they were hired to do, but then they didn't pay them, and they had the money to do so. So verses 4 and 5 impute divine discipline to the two men who have lied to the workers, withheld their wages, and in doing so, stranded them in their own priest nation without the means to feed their families. Now that is cruel. These people had families at home, and they're doing all they can to get the harvest out of the crops and into the store so that the people of the community, namely Jerusalem, the wives, can go in there and buy the food for the family. And they, therefore, did not pay these men their due wages. Therefore, principle emerges. There's nothing new under the sun. The old sin nature is alive and active. If you're not careful, you're going to find out somebody is going to be exactly like these guys in the first century of Jerusalem. And James is trying to deal with those. The absence of honor and integrity among citizens of Israel is illustrated by the fraudulent behavior of these two men. They're not the Lone Rangers, but they're a good illustration. They revel in their successful chicanery. They celebrate the lifestyle of the rich and famous. Their ill-gotten gain will soon be the reason for the Lord's divine justice to come down upon them like a mighty stream. Justice follows these kinds of behaviors. It will occur to them. It will happen to them. And therefore, you can learn from them. The summary of those two men concludes verse 5 with this condemnation. The quote is, "You have nourished your souls in the day of slaughter." Ooh. The day of slaughter. Who's going to be slaughtered? These guys may not die, but they're going to be slaughtered because of their poor reputation that they're now demonstrating in the streets of Jerusalem. There were some people in our little old town in South Alabama, and I would hear my dad and mother talk about certain individuals that lined up with this kind of mentality. They would not call names in front of me, but they knew who they were talking about. And my dad would talk about how you couldn't trust them because of this, that, and the other thing. He and Joel Witherington had a store, sold tires, had gas pumps out front, didn't make much money on the gas, but you could inspect people's tires while you were doing that. And so tires was where the money was. And they would come in for whatever reason and want to buy some tires. They'd sell it to them. They want to get them on time. My dad would go back in the office with them and say, "Okay, here's what we need to do, X number of dollars every month till it's paid off." And they'd cut that deal and go on. Well, Dad needed to get the tires out of the store, and they needed to leave the money behind, but they wanted it on time. And they might do it pretty well the first couple of months, and then they would fade off and didn't want to do that anymore. I remember there was this one fellow, the story my dad told, that bought all of these tires paid the first installment and then never paid again. And so he decided to go to his house to see if he maybe could get some money from him. And when he drove up, they had a flower bed out front. And in the flower bed were those tires, slick. He had run them dry, no tread. And in the middle of the tire were petunias and such. Went into the house to see if he could get any money from them, and they claimed they didn't have any. So he decided after a while he wasn't going to make any progress there, but that those tires out in the flower bed were his. He was in one of the company trucks, pickup, pulled those tires out of that flower bed and threw them in the back and drove off. They were his tires. Those are some of the things that you have to do when you're in free enterprise. You'll sell a product to people on time, and they'll swear they're going to pay you, and then they don't. And sometimes you don't have a means of recovering anything. And there was nothing to recover. These tires were slick with the mud on them, of course. But he got his tires back, threw them in the back, and drove off. He told that story at the supper table. And I was thinking, well, at least you got your tires back. But he didn't get the money. They didn't have the tires or the petunias. Kind of thing that goes on in free enterprise. Some of you who are in business, selling products or whatever they happen to be, you may run into these kinds of things from time to time. And when you let people have your product and go out the door, if they get it on time, you're trusting them that over a period of time they're going to pay you what you're owed. It doesn't always work that way. When it says free enterprise, the word free sometimes is just a little bit bashful. The summary for these two men concludes verse 5 with this condemnation. You have nourished your souls in the day of slaughter. You can interpret slaughter however you wish, but economically there was a slaughter there, so to speak. Instead of their souls being nourished, the doctrine there, instead of being nourished with doctrine, theirs are stuffed with the sensibilities of pleasure and concupiscence. You can look those up if you like. Those are not very positive, which is described as an animal being fattened for slaughter. If you're in free enterprise, you can be fattened for slaughter. These guys were in business to harvest. They had done a good job or they wouldn't have been hired. Therefore, they were turned loose to go out and get the products out of the field and then get to the back door of the grocery store. They did all of that. But those who hired them had something called concupiscence. They didn't ante up. They didn't pay them their wages. And they had to go home and tell their wives, you can't go to the grocery store tomorrow because we don't have the money to pay for the food. And you're telling your wife and your children, well, the children are standing around on how old they would be. You figure that out. But the wife is sitting there thinking, I've got children to feed first, and these people are not paying us the money that's been earned. So when you're in business, always remember that there's going to be an exchange. Whatever your product is, it goes out the front door, but it came in the back door where you paid for it. And if it doesn't, when they don't do their duty, then at some point you can't stay in business. So to repeat, instead of their souls being nourished with doctrine, theirs are stuffed with the sensibilities of pleasure and concupiscence. which is described as an animal being fattened for the slaughter. So it is this type of fleshly lust that lead to the downfall of individuals, which often cause the downfall of nations. Now, as you turn the page, which is okay, we were right on the verge of something very similar to that occurring in this country over the last 4 years. When you have people in a free enterprise society where products are being produced, coming into the back door, being displayed, and then people come in the front door to buy them and then leave with the items, you expect one of two things to happen: cash on the barrel head, or an agreement that you can pay on time, and that these people have the integrity to do that in a systematic way. And when they fail to do so, there'll come a time when you can't pay the people at the back door because you don't have the money. And therefore, free enterprise crumbles because of the lack of integrity regarding those who want to buy a product but not pay for it, but are free in their mind to take it anyway. So therefore, in the case of national decline, the benighted cheer the advance into hedonism, while the enlightened view it as the swan song's death knell for approaching slavery. Everybody gets to be a slave eventually because nobody can buy anything. And you have to depend on somebody that might give you a break. But how many people does it take to feed those who are starving? In our present hour of discontent, it's only those whose souls are replete with multiple categories of doctrines that will sustain them in the coming crisis. Here's what I've got to say. There has to be enough doctrine in the souls of the people, regardless of their backgrounds, regardless of their belief systems, to come to the realization that something has to be done in order to maintain order in the society. And you had people in this country of various backgrounds, various races, various incomes, etc., that united and said, enough. We're not going to allow this dog to hunt. And somehow, some way, people of all stripes decided to come together at the polling place and vote that crowd out. And they did a good job. You'll have to admit that. Dark side knows how to do their job. But there were enough people in this country to say enough. Regardless of who they are, we'll take anybody else that's got a better idea of how to run this country. We're not there yet. We've got about 30-some-odd days left before maybe order can be restored, but right now we teeter as a client nation. And to add to that idea, know this, we would not be in this particular point were it not for the loss of thought collectively in client nation America over the last 100 years. And in that process, our children have been brainwashed. They roam in the streets in anti-Semitic protests, college campuses, and a lot of high schools. The little darlings have gone berserk. How did they get there? Because the parents had lost their thought first. And that's how a client nation looks when it's in decline. When you've had enough, you're willing to say, maybe there's somebody else can do this job better than this bunch that's in. And there, that bunch is still in, by the way. And you would take a capital E and put V-I-L behind it, and that describes who they are. And I would pronounce that evil. We live through this almost. They're not done yet. They want to destroy who's coming into power. And people of all classes, races, and stripes decided to go vote for this guy that everybody said was a crook and a whore and all that kind of business. Let's go with that crook and whore as opposed to the ones we've got. And by the way, those were accolades assigned to him by the dark side, who were also crooks and whores. Now we see the light at the end of the tunnel. We see this in doctrine, in James 5. Thievery in free enterprise. In our present hour of discontent, it's only those whose souls are replete with multiple categories of doctrines that will sustain them in the coming crisis. See, the doctrine is what does it. Doctrine is the immutable force within the souls of believers and the only valid resource that can overcome assaults from the Satanic Academy of Cosmic Didactics. Lucifer runs the whole show, you do remember that. Go back to Genesis 2 and the early verses of Genesis 3, and that's when the dark side took over the planet. And it's been that way ever since. And the only thing that can defend the souls of individuals during the whole process of a thing called Homo sapiens, and it was only two people at the beginning, that these were the Homo sapiens, two of them. Adam and Isha. She went south, he followed, and therefore Lucifer won that opening shot. Let's look at Cosmos Diabolicus. Oh, I wanted to read you some verses. I've got expanded translations here. In our context, verses 4 and 5, that's where we are in our study of this chapter. Let's take a look at how the expanded translation looks, and then we'll fill in the blanks as we go. Observe this. The wages of the workers, that's plural aorist active participle of ergates. There's an idiosyncrasy in my computer that doesn't like an epsilon with a smooth breathing on it. And when you go get the epsilon with a smooth breathing on it and put it in your computer, for some reason they won't want to put a trademark on it. That's what TM is for. Now, how a smooth-breathing epsilon and a trademark symbol somehow get confused, I don't know. But there it is. It's, let's see if I can do this. Oh, do I have a thing here? Oh, here's a thing. That's what it's supposed to look like, but not a TM. I have to stop and explain to you why the TM is there. Ergates. Agricultural laborers. Those are the workers who have harvested your fields, the ones having been defrauded of wages by you rich reversionists, keep screaming. Present active indicative of kradzo. And by the way, there's a D in there in front of the Z. See that? You don't find it in the Greek. But you have to have the D in front of the Z to pronounce it properly. So I stuck the D in there because that's how you pronounce the Z and you have to put a D in front of it, just so you know. But there's no D there, but you have to say it. Kradzo, an urgent protest for help. And outcries. The outcries, the plural boe, means they're screaming. These people are screaming because they got to go home and tell mama there's no money to go to the grocery store. Of the ones having harvested has reached the ears of Yahweh Sabaoth. That's the Hebrew. And Kurios Sabaoth in the Greek. The Lord of the armies, Jesus Christ. Then verse 5. You have lived, constantive, aorist, active, indicative of the verb tromphao. You've lived in pleasure. In luxury, constantive, plural, aorist, active, indicative of the verb spatalao. Luxury in eating and drinking, being self-indulgent, wanton, being without check or limitation. And self-indulgence in the land, you have been a sensual hedonist on the earth and led a life of wanton, constantive, plural, active, indicative of the verb trepho, to fatten yourselves by revelry, that is, licentious or promiscuous merrymaking. Anyone? Merrymaking. And that comes out pleasure. And you have nourished your souls as in the day of slaughter. Client Nation America 2024. How'd y'all like that year? Did you think we're not going to get through this? Well, let me just tell you this. There is a history that can be cataloged, studied, and learned from going through Europe westward to the Atlantic Ocean, where client nations rose, prospered, benefited the people involved, and then there was a gradual loss of thought forcing people to move westward all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. And then they said, enough of this, and they started paddling to Massachusetts. That's how bad it was. And then they got over here and set up shop 250 years ago. And things were going fairly nicely until about 4 years ago, when the loss of thought culminated into the souls of the people of this country to such a degree, the loss of thought led to chaos. And you've been through it and you've lived through it. Now we've got a chance. We've got a chance come January to maybe piece these things back together. But see, the loss of thought is still out there in the souls of the children who in another 5 to 10 years, they're going to be speckled through the population, breeding, bringing more DeFi into the mainstream. That's where we are. That's how client nations fall. We don't know if we can recover from this, but we sure got a good start because we went to school. When you get down to verse 5, you see the whole outcome of it, the day of slaughter. The principles of faith and duty noted above are absent from the souls of those to whom James writes in James chapter 5, where we continue our analysis in verse 6 with the phrase, you have condemned, the second person plural, aorist active indicative of the verb kata dekadzo. There's that Z again that requires a D in pronunciation. You can't say dekadzo. You have to put a D in front of it if you want to pronounce it properly. to give judgment against, pass sentence, and condemn. To give judgment against, to pass sentence, or condemn. And James 5, 6 in New American Standard reads, you have condemned and put to death the righteous person. He offers you no resistance. Loss of thought. The two rich men have condemned these innocent workers by unscrupulously coordinating to deprive them after they harvested their crops. Well, I'll give you an idea. Let's say that you've got a house with a big piece of property that has grass on it. And you want people to come in and mow that stuff. Maybe just do some other things in the yard to spruce things up. And they do a good job, and they stand out in the driveway waiting for you to come pay them. And you say, sorry, I won't be able to pay you today. They say, well, you called and asked us to come over and do this and look around you to see we did a pretty good job here. I say, yeah, but we've just decided not to pay you. Now, you better hope they didn't bring guns with them. I don't know what happened. This is first century. But you'd think that somebody would have gotten a machete or something and done something. But the issue in the context that James puts us is that these guys got away with it. They didn't pay him a dime. And if they didn't pay him a dime, that means that those men had to go home that night and tell their wives and children, you're going to be hungry for a while. The principles of faith and duty noted above are absent from the souls of those to whom James writes in James chapter 5, where we continue our analysis in verse 6 with the phrase, you have condemned, the second person plural aorist active indicative of the verb kata dikadzo, to give judgment against, past sentence, and condemn. Now, with that in mind, we have James 5, 6 again. You have condemned and put to death the righteous person who offers you no resistance. Now, the two rich men have condemned these innocent workers by unscrupulously coordinating to deprive them after they harvested their crops. Then to illustrate how severe, I've tried to send out a new document. I don't know how sever got in there, but severe is the word. How severe this injustice is, James said these two men have killed an innocent man, a constative plural active indicative of the verb frenuo. And frenuo means to murder, to kill a man unjustly. There's a reason to be killing some people, but there's a just way to do that when they rob the bank or something. And also see James 2:11 and James 4:2 on that issue. Then we have the word innocent. It's an adjective, dikaios, means righteous. In this context, it is necessary to mention the commentary of how this word for righteous is defined and applied by this Greek dictionary. That's the Complete Word Study Dictionary of the New Testament. We have dikaios. Here's how it reads. There are a lot of verses here, if you want to research them, that support this, but I won't quote them. In the New Testament, those that are called righteous, that's dikaioi, are those who have conditioned their lives by the standard which is not theirs but God's. There are some verses. They are the people related to God and who, as a result of this relationship, walk with God. A flurry of references if you're interested. A righteous person is one justified by faith and showing forth his faith by works. And you can see that in James 2, verses 14 through 26, and 1 John chapter 3, verse 2. There's a system called free enterprise. And that's where free people are able to deal with each other in an honorable way. Now, the rich, because of their financial status, often assume themselves innocent and or superior to those who are laborers. Well, there are reasons for some people being in business as an entrepreneur and others who are laborers, people that you hire to get the job done. And so the one who does the hiring has a responsibility to pay those that come in to do the work a fair price, a salary, something that's agreed upon beforehand. And when the payday comes, you have to cut a check for those people. And they line up at the door wanting at the end of the month, for example, they want money or a check that they can take to the bank. And if you don't do that, these people have got to go home and tell mama no groceries. You can't go in business and hire people to do the job, get it in the back door so people can take it out the front door and go feed their families. And when that has a breakdown and there's a loss of thought, then you have chaos in the society. And when, therefore, there are so many people in the society that don't have the integrity to maintain order in the society, then everything begins to crumble. And that's what we see going on presently in Client Nation America. And proudly, let's say, hopefully, somebody said enough. And enough people voted for that. I didn't think I'd ever see the day. But you know, when you know how a child can come in, they don't have any sense. They can go into their rooms with all the toys and everything, and they can have every toy in the entire room out in the middle of the floor disordered. And you come in and take a look at that and say, well, it looks like we're going to have a little order here. Let's clean up the room. And then they stand around and scream and cry. You say, well, what about this? Since this is so disordered and we can't figure out what goes where, I'm going to back the car up and put everything in the trunk and take it to a toy store and let other people in the community's children have it. Wah, it says. Oh, you made this mess, you got to clean it up. Wah. And see, who you are, you're a budding criminal. Let's sit down and find out what a criminal is. A criminal is somebody who takes things that doesn't belong to them, use them, and then leave them scattered hither and yon. And then I have to come in and clean this up because you won't do it. So since I don't want this mess here, I'm putting it in the trunk of the car. Wah, wah. And when I see the taillights go over the hill, there go your stuff. Wah. But in the future, if we ever put anything back in this room, it needs to go on the shelf when you're done with it. Wah. I just repeat six. You have condemned and put to death the righteous person. He offers you no resistance. He offers you no resistance. You have condemned the second person plural, aorist indicative, the verb kata dikadzo, to give judgment against past sentence and condemn. You have condemned and put to death the righteous person. He offers you no resistance. Okay, again, the two rich men have condemned these innocent workers by unscrupulously coordinating to deprive them of their harvest after they harvested their crops. And to illustrate how severe this injustice is, James said these two men have killed an innocent man, the constitutive plural active indicative of the verb franuo, to murder, to kill a man unjustly, and I gave you references. Then we have the innocent, and I gave you the breakdown there. So finally, the rich, because of their financial status, often assume themselves innocent or superior to those who are laborers. They're not superior. They have the talent to harvest. They're good at that. You happen to have the capital to buy stuff. In their arrogance, reversionistic rich men can also attempt to use their wealth to influence the courts to directly or indirectly condemn the innocent or the righteous. However, James calls these men out for such behavior because the law is designed to oppose the guilty, not the innocent. So what happens next? James drives home the extent of these rich men's corruption and abuse as he closes this verse and his use of the customary singular present middle indicative of the verb atetasso, used metaphorically, to, quote, set oneself in opposition to or in array against, that is, to resist. And you see that in James 4:6 and James 5:6. Not bad. And this adds to this concept of resisting. The adverb here is ou, means not or does not. The adverb to make it clear that the people these rich reversionists are condemning did not even fight back against this injustice. The people these rich reversionists are condemning did not even fight back against the injustice. And this concludes what we set apart in the first paragraph of James, chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. The expanded translation of James 5, verse 6 reads this way. You have condemned, aorist active indicative of the verb, it's kata dikadzo, and murdered. Constitutive aorist active indicative of the verb phrenuo, that's the word murdered. Who got murdered? The innocent. Dikaos, those who consistently apply divine standards, innocent people. And he does not oppose the negative ouk plus the customary present middle indicative of the verb antitasso. He does not oppose you. That's not a good verse, is it? We've run into a lot of things here. And in James 5 is a big breakdown. And that's why James is upset. You know who James is? He's the, except for Jesus Christ, he's the elder brother in Joseph and Mary's family. He is the stud muffin except for Jesus. He is the one who decided to sit down and write in Koine Greek some thoughts and ideas about how things ought to be in Jerusalem. And you see when you get down to verse 6, he's got a good hold and understanding on how things ought to be. Now, I've already done the research. I ordered a bunch of books on James before I even started this study back years ago. I picked out three guys that I thought had done a really good synopsis of the letter of James. I've got them already in my computer. The synopsis will be interesting to you, I assume. Some of you may need to get some coffee. But when you go through that, you're going to see their analysis of the five chapters. I thought they did a good job. Now, I want to tell you, okay, how is it that I was able to teach all five chapters of this? I've already finished. This is a review. I did all five chapters. And in the process, the things, footnotes and inserts and these kinds of things, I've tried to highlight the whole thing as I went through. Now, where did I get this information? Where I've always gotten my information. I stole it. I stole it. You think, you say, well, we figured that you were an intelligent guy and been doing this a good long time. No. You completely misunderstand. I went out to Houston, Texas because I stumbled on the idea. A lot of people still are scratching their heads over this. I stumbled on the idea that I had the gift of pastor teacher when I was 12 years old. And a lot of people from where I came from scratched their heads about the idea that I was going to go off all the way to Houston, Texas and try out for pastor. They're still laughing. Those are still alive. And so I stayed out there for dang near 8 years. And that was when the colonel taught every night. You say, every night? Yes. Even on Saturday, which was a movie. And I looked on the movie on Saturday nights as a Bible class. Okay? Because he was born in Beverly Hills. And he knew all these actors and knew about the movie business and that kind of thing. And knew, therefore, how to exegete a movie. So he would pick the movies. And when we went to the movie at Baraka, we knew that the movie itself was going to contain a lot of principles that we could recognize the application for in the movie. And he would give a run-up to this. The lecture that he gave before the movie was like a Bible class. Got that? Then you'd watch the movie. And sometimes it was a double feature. So I consider the movies to be a Bible class. And we saw good movies. Why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because I went there because that to me, and still remains so, the summum bonum of the inculcation of exegetical analysis of Scripture for anyone who needs to know precisely what the Word of God has to say. And if you stay there and listen and do the study and happen to have the spiritual gift of pastor, teacher, or evangelist, then you're going to come away after the long haul with a huge inventory of biblical absolutes from the Hebrew and the Koine Greek. And if you have a pastor, teacher deal in your life, then that is going to become the resource for you to get ultimately into a pulpit or out in the hinterlands and communicate the Word of God from the power of the original languages, which I'm telling you this, it is the absolute truth. Do this and don't do that. They're called imperative moods. And there are 55 of them in the letter of James. And now we've been through all 55. And I've just run through this deal here. Now James 5:6. So I want to repeat it. You have condemned. Aorist active indicative of the verb kata dikadzo. And murdered. Constitutive aorist active indicative of the verb phronuo. The innocent. Dikaios. Or dikaios is really the way it's pronounced. Dikaios. Those who consistently apply divine standards. And he does not oppose the negative ouk plus the customary present middle indicative of the verb ante tasso. He does not oppose you. Now we've got paragraph 2. Exhortation in view of the coming of the Lord. This is verses 7 through 12. Now James opens verse 7. Let's take a look here. Let's note 3 points in a verse, and then we'll pause for tea and crumpets. James opens verse 7 with the inferential conjunction un, translated therefore, in reference to what preceded it, that is, the trouble outlined in the first 6 verses of the chapter. So we've got trouble for six verses, which is not unusual for James in this letter. Here they are. Includes one hoarding their riches to the point of rotting. That's verses 2 and 3. Two, cheating those who work for them. That's verse 4. Three, living lavishly to satisfy their lusts. Verse 5. And four, condemning the innocent. Verse 6. These are the people of Jerusalem. He made it to chapter 5 and he's ripping them. Now James shifts gears in verses 7 through 12, where he presents six more imperative moods that form the next paragraph of James chapter 5, which is an exhortation of his congregation to be patient, endure, and to therefore stop lying. So you've been lying up to this point, let's put a stop to it. New American Standard, James 5, verses 7 through 8. Therefore be patient. Aorist active imperative mood number 42 of the verb makrothumeo. Be patient, brethren, that members of the royal family, until the coming of the Lord. So I say be patient for a good long while, unless the rapture occurs tomorrow. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it, until it gets the early and late rains. See, in the agricultural society, you got to plant the crops, hope they come up, got enough rain, they blossom and so on. You can harvest them and get them to the grocery store. See, that's what's going on in Jerusalem in the context we have with James. You too be patient. Aorist active imperative mood number 43 of makrothumeo. That's be patient. Strengthen your hearts, that's your cardias, for the coming of the Lord is near. Whoa, look at that. Coming of the Lord is near. First century. Is this a subtle concept of the rapture of the church? In the first century? Anyone? In a good long while. But the point is, the coming of the Lord is near. What does near mean? It means the rapture of the church is the next prophetic event on the calendar. And it was true in the first century. Still true. Could still happen. It could happen today. Well, that's the verses that get us down to this point, and it's right at 10:30. So why don't I call this off? You get tea and crumpets, and we'll resume at point 4 at about 10 till the hour.